While Republicans control all houses of state government right now, they've been at loggerheads for the past 2 months about the state's next two-year budget. But late last week, a deal was reached and the legislation moved quickly, with Governor Walker even announcing a partial list of his vetoes just hours after the Senate acted and approved the measure. Also last week, the legislature gave final approval to a $3 billion incentive package aimed at convincing Taiwanese tech company Foxconn to build a $10 billion factory complex and hire up to 13,000 workers. In short, it was a very busy week at the state capitol, and this hour we are glad to welcome two state lawmakers who will tell us all about what they liked about these bills and what they didn't. That's today on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. Joining me for the discussion today are two assemblymen from northern Wisconsin. First, joining us by phone, I'd like to introduce Nick Milroy. He is a Democratic State Assemblyman representing the 73rd District of northwestern Wisconsin. He lives in South Range and joins us by phone. Nick Milroy, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning, Rich.
Morning. Also, an aside, Nick Milroy was the first lawmaker to remember my name as when I was a student reporter. So I thought that's a story I tell everybody whether they like it or not. Joining me in studio, we've got Romaine Quinn. He is a Republican state assemblyman representing the 75th District of Western Wisconsin. He lives in Chautauqua. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Good to be here again.
Good to have you. Listeners, we want to hear from you as well. If you've got a question or comment about the budget, about Foxconn, about any pending legislation, give us a call. 1-800-228-5615 is the number. And if you don't want to go on the air live, you can post on our West Side Facebook page, and I will do my best to get that question to our guests. So with that, I want to start off right away. I'll go to you, Romaine Quinn. Why are we passing a budget in mid-September when it was due 2 months ago?
Well, as you know, Rich, you and I, we've discussed this with Senator Bealey before when the budget was still behind when we were on the show, on why it wasn't getting done. And the biggest hang-up was the transportation budget. Again, the Assembly struck the position early on, even right after last budget, that said the $700 to $800 million you borrowed last budget was not going to be an ongoing thing, and that going forward we need to reduce that number. And if you need that money, then find more ways to pay for it. So that's been our hang-up the whole time. The Senate, as you know, took the governor's position. And not only that, they took it and ran with it, asking for more transportation bonding in the end than the governor even proposed. And towards the end, the governor was willing to come back to our position with even zero bonding, no income tax cuts to pay for those, and move forward to live within our means. But that's adjusted a little bit now. We reduced the borrowing to $400 million overall from the governor's original $500 million. And, of course, as you know, there's a new fee on hybrid and electric cars as well that supports some of that new bonding over time. So that was the biggest hang-up, and I think all of us kind of swallowed a little bit on that and said we need to get this done. The Assembly's been ready to pass this budget for a long time, especially for schools. We said, well, let's come to the table and get that piece done to give our schools that certainty. We'll argue about transportation later. Senate was unwilling to do that. But we're happy now that it is done. It is being signed very shortly. And we're excited to move forward with that because it's a good budget.
Before we, well, okay, that kind of answers my next follow-up question for you, Romaine, is are you happy with it? I mean, we'll get into some of the details, and I know there's so much in there that it would be hard to like every single piece of it, but are you happy overall? Well, and you voted for it, I assume.
Yes, I did. And like any budget, and I think, unfortunately, a lot of us have set this bar on both sides of the aisle that it has to be exactly what we want or we're voting no. Well, you're not going to get that, and we see that within our own party. I mean, I had major disagreements with many senators on the transportation budget, but overall, there is something for everyone in this budget. There's increases across the board for health care, for education, you name it. So it's hard not to find things in this budget that you like because there's so many interests at play, and so many agencies got more dollars to spend on programs that people care about. And we were happy with a lot of our budget amendments that we got through. And so, yes, I think the budget is a positive step in the right direction.
Nick Milroy, let's go and get the Democratic side of the argument here. I imagine that you've got somewhat different feelings about the state budget than Romaine Quinn. But first off, what's your take on what the holdup was? Do you agree that it was transportation as a major contention? And I guess the follow-ups are, did you vote for it? And what do you like about it or what don't you like about it?
Sure. Well, I can tell you anytime you pass a budget. It's a very difficult thing to get the votes, no matter who's in charge, especially when you have divided government. But in this case, the Republicans can control both branches of the legislature and also the executive branch. So there's no reason this shouldn't have been done on time. So it just shows the dysfunction that's going on down in Madison. And I think a lot of the reason it didn't pass could be laid on the fact that they've totally failed us on transportation funding. But there was also a lot of holdouts, and this is more so in the Senate, where you have these extreme right-wing Tea Party-type senators that put out their own agenda and won't budge without getting some consideration for the type of things that they want put in the budget or taken out of the budget.
Are you talking about repealing prevailing wage?
That was one of the big ones, and it looks like it's something that they were able to hold the governor hostage on, and it looks like it's something that the governor is going to do.
Well, let me set this up a little bit so folks understand it. Prevailing wage has been something that has been debated for the last couple of years in the state legislature, and it's being reported that the deal was struck between Governor Scott Walker and the three, I believe, or more Republicans in the state Senate on Friday to get the budget through the legislature. The deal was this. Governor Walker promised to use his line item veto pen to immediately repeal the prevailing wage law for state road projects. The way I understand it, it was going to sunset at some point. And with that guarantee, Republican Senator Holdouts voted in favor of the budget. Romaine Quinn, what's your thoughts on that as a way to get those last three votes?
Yeah, and like I said, obviously, I voted for the budget without the provisions that they were requesting.
Because the assembly went a week before, didn't they?
Yep, during the same week, but earlier that week. So, okay. I mean, and to Nick's point, he's right. Some of those senators are more far right, but just like we have liberals in Madison that are much more far left than even Nick on a lot of different issues. So, but that's the point, is that we're independent contractors that look out for the best interests of our districts. And just because my district doesn't value something doesn't mean someone else's doesn't. And so I understand where they're coming from. I understand that they have to do what they need to do. But yes, it was unfortunate that a handful of senators, one in particular, managed to get a provision to exempt sales tax on beekeeping supplies. You know, that's one of those issues last minute that gave me heartburn. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a drop in the bucket. But it's like, gosh, you're willing to hold up a budget, yet you get a provision in there to exempt sales tax for beekeepers, because I think he might be a beekeeper, at a time when we're trying to create more fairness, parity, and simplicity in our tax code. So, again, there are things that I didn't like in the budget, especially the way at the end where it was kind of held up. But it's not going to give me heartburn. It's done with now, and 99% of the budget stayed the same. And again, there's a lot of really good provisions. So, and it's easy to say that, you know, it's these three Republicans' fault.
Sure.
But where were the Democrats? I cannot believe, and well, I guess I can believe it because we're in such a partisan time, and nationally and locally and in the state. But it's just interesting to me that it's easy to say Republicans held this up, but not one Democrat voted for this. We could have passed that with the Senate a long time ago if, like, two Democrats came to the table. One came to the table, but they don't. Because they won't admit that, and we even had people in our own assembly that said there's not one thing good they can find in this budget. You're telling me there's not one good thing in this budget? $639 million more for schools, more for nursing homes, more for personal care workers, more for broadband. More, I mean, there are a whole litany of things that are good in this budget, but unfortunately we live in a world that's so partisan that we refuse to admit it, and I just think it's unfortunate.
Were there Democratic amendments offered to the budget?
I received a lot of amendments the day of the floor. Many of them were 70 pages long, and there's no way I was going to be able to read them in 10 minutes. So, yes, there were amendments, I'm sure, that were struck down on the Joint Finance Committee, but I never saw anything, and we were not able to caucus on any before we went to the floor for a vote. So, and that's another issue, too, and we've tried to be bipartisan on our bills, and a lot will say, well, we don't take into account a lot of assembly amendments, and a lot of times that's true, but I have never had a Democrat member looking to try to get a budget amendment in my office to say, hey, Romaine, this is valuable to me. This is important to me. And I know you guys have the control right now. Will you work with me on this to try and get this in? I mean, I was able to amend five or six times things that I wanted in the budget, but I never had one come to my door and say, Romaine, it's going to be hard for me. Will you help me? So I have some sympathy for the minority party because I do work with a lot of them on a lot of my bills. But at the same time, if they don't put forward that sincere effort, don't expect any results.
Nick Milroy, on what do you say to that? As far as, you know, being in the minority party, I would imagine it's frustrating when you're not included. But what about the argument that you've not even come to the table?
Well, number one, that's not truthful, and I think it's a little disingenuous. Whenever one party controls all of government, there really is very limited chance of the minority party to have much of any influence over the budget. And the process that we go through, the budget has to first pass through the Joint Finance Committee, which is made up of senators and assembly representatives. And that is where the minority party offers their ideas. Now, each party has, designated people serving on those committees, and those are the people that we go to share our ideas on how to make budgets better, or what we would like to see included or excluded from budgets. So, trying to work with someone from the majority party when you're in the minority sometimes is a tack that people can take. And I can tell you specifically, one of the biggest pushes from my region, and it's something that hundreds of people have contacted legislators about, they've come down to Madison to lobby on, was an exposition district for far northwestern Wisconsin. And we work very closely with two senators that were amiable to trying to get this included into the budget. And these were two Republican senators. Unfortunately, that never happened. So when you're in the minority, you have very limited chance of really making big changes to budget. So it's imperative that you focus on, you know, smaller things or one big thing. And that was the exposition district was one of the most important things for our region. And unfortunately, it was not included in the budget.
I want to go real quick to, we touched on prevailing wage, and I wanted to get a kind of a round robin here about how you both look at this issue. Prevailing wage is basically government sets a minimum for what contractors for road projects, in this case, would be paid, and conservatives have argued that it drives up costs, and more liberal folks argue that it's about giving people honest wage for honest day's work. Nick Milroy, what's your take on prevailing wage and the repeal of it included in the state budget?
Well, the prevailing wage statutes are very important statutes. What the prevailing wage statutes do are they set the wage for the type of work that's being done for a worker on a government project at the average wage that's being paid in the private sector in that region. And there's a very specific reason for that. In the private sector, when you contract out with somebody to do work, whether it's construction or anything, you can choose the contractor that you want to go with. You might be willing to pay one contractor more than another because you know the quality of their work is higher, their safety standards are higher, and you've had a good working relationship with them. In government, we don't have that option. Government contracts are required to go to the lowest bidder. Now, the reason for the prevailing wage is if you're required to go to the lowest bidder, there's only three things that determine what a bid on a contract's going to be. Number one, it's the wages that the contractor has to pay out to his employees. Number two, it's the materials that he has to pay for the project. And number three, it's the amount of profit they want to make on the job. Now, the amount of profit they want to make is usually a very small percentage. The materials are pretty much a standard price, no matter who the contractor is. So the only fudge factor that they possibly could have would be with wages. So if we repeal the prevailing wage, I believe what we are going to see is contractors that bid on these government jobs are going to try to find the lowest quality workforce of people that are willing to work for the least amount of money so that they're able to win these contracts. I think that's going to cost taxpayers in the long run because we're going to lose jobs to out-of-state companies. They're going to come in, they're going to do shoddy work, and it's going to end up costing more to fix it in the future.
Romaine Quinn, your take on prevailing wage and whether, and your take on it being included in the budget as it was.
Yeah, and like you know, this has been debated for a couple of years, and we repealed it on local governments already. This is something that I remember hearing my grandpa as a town chair complaining about since I was little. I mean, town chairs all over complain about, you know, the white sheet projects, prevailing wage projects, and frankly, they're not reflective of local wages. They're just not. I've talked to contractors. Generally, they pay their guys $30 an hour. They do a prevailing wage project somewhere up north, a little further. It's a government project. Now he's got to pay his guy $50, $55 an hour. And that's great, and I want everyone to make a really good wage. I want everyone to be rich. But who's paying the bill? It's the township that doesn't already have a lot of money. It's the municipality. It's the school district. And now it's state taxpayers. It's taxpayers that are footing the bill. So I don't think it has ever been locally indicative of actual wages. And I don't think it's our business to dictate that. And to think that wages are suddenly going to be cut and falling, I talked to the operating engineers, and they cannot find people today to do the job. And those guys are getting older, and they bust their butts, and they can't work, you know, till they're 65 like a lot of us. And so you're not going to be able to reduce wages because you can't find people now. So I don't think all the doom and gloom is going to happen with this. And I just don't think that we should be dictating that to governments or local entities or state government on what we're expected to pay for that wage.
With that, let's take our first break here on the West Side. I'm joined by Romaine Quinn and Nick Milroy. Quinn is a Republican State Assemblyman representing the 75th District. He lives in Chautauqua. Milroy is a Democratic State Assemblyman representing the 73rd District of Northwestern Wisconsin, living in South Range. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. We've got wide open phone lines. If you've got a question or a comment about the budget, about Foxconn, you name it, let us know. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Second Century Endowment Fund, a board-designated endowment fund providing ongoing financial support for WPR in its second century of service to the residents of Wisconsin. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, celebrating Septoberfest and the fall season in September and October. Live eagles, interactive exhibits, and more. NationalEagleCenter.org.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about the state budget with two lawmakers from our region. Nick Milroy is a Democratic State Assemblyman representing the 73rd District. Romaine Quinn is a Republican Assemblyman representing the 75th. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. If you can't get through, check out the West Side Facebook page. You can post your question or comment there. Also, if you've missed part of the program or would like to listen again, check out WPR.org. You find the West Side link, and you'll have access to years' worth of programming. Tons and tons of good stuff. 1-800-228-5615. So we touched on prevailing wage just because I thought it was interesting that that was one of the final pieces of the puzzle here. But the big dog is transportation, so let's just jump right into it. Romaine Quinn, I'll start with you. So there's a lot of talk about raising the gas tax or increasing fees to help pay for the state's transportation budget deficit, but the only fee, which you mentioned earlier, increases went to owners of hybrids and electric vehicles instead of a plan to dealing with falling gas tax revenues. Lawmakers also approved $400 million in borrowing, so which is low compared to other budgets, but there were also road projects that were delayed. So what does the transportation budget deal mean for your district?
Yeah, no, great question. And like I said, this has been the contentious piece and basically the holdup of the budget. So what's important is that we live within our means. And so as part of this, yes, we borrowed $400 million, but there are projects we put off, like parts of the zoo and parts of the east-west.
The tangle down in Milwaukee.
Right. Yep. So I think they finished the core, but not the rest of it, and including the east-west project. And frankly, this was a budget battle last time, too. 35 of us had to sign a letter that said, no, if you're going to cut out-state projects to make sure southeastern projects are on track, that's not going to happen. And we're not voting for a budget that does that. So fortunately, those two projects were not enumerated. Now, that created heartburn to a lot of southeastern senators and representatives. Well, that's the point. If you want your projects done, you have to find a way to pay for it. So in terms of our district, there was an increase, for instance, in bridge aids and local aids. But we know our townships are still behind. Our townships are very far behind in certain parts of the state where there's low economic value and slow growth. And so we need an injection of money into our town roads. And unfortunately, that did not come this budget. Again, there was an increase, but not substantial. So I think over time, and I've talked to the secretary, I've had him in my office, Dave Ross. He's from Superior, mm-hmm. in the Nick's back door. And I think he did a good job as mayor, and I believe him when he says, give us more time, we'll find more dollars. He's pointed to examples. He's found millions of dollars that they've cut and saved and kept projects on track just with the limited dollars they've had. So I'm hoping that this plays out, that over the next 2 years, they are able to really get their hands on the DOT, find savings as there are. And so these senators that have held everything up because they don't want any more money for roads, is that 2 years from now, there's no more excuses. It's the governor's agency. We've had a new secretary who's very reform-minded. We've enacted the reforms, and we're going to come back, and we're going to see black and white how much money we need and how much revenue there is, and then we're going to have that real discussion, because there's no more putting it off long-term. If you want your southeastern mega projects done and we want our town roads done, not one is going to be sacrificed for the other, and so come to the table with that. And I think that's going to happen. And just so you do know, gas tax revenues actually did go up this budget. So we are... it didn't decline.
As a source, or the gas tax was increased?
No, the gas tax didn't increase, but revenues from gas tax actually went up.
More people driving or something.
Right, so they're not declining right now, but we do know over time they will, especially as you mentioned, electric vehicles. So on that particular tax on electric cars, I'm generally supportive of creating more parity between those that use electric vehicles and those that are regular drivers. A lot of those cars are just as heavy as my Chevy Malibu that I drove in high school, or Grandma and Grandpa's Buick that they drive down the road that gets a lot worse mileage. So, but the issue is the hybrid. That's the problem, how they define hybrid. And that's why I'm going to be working with another representative going forward with new language, because a hybrid Tahoe gets only marginally better than a regular Tahoe, but now they're paying another $75. So is that fair or not? And that hybrid definition is the issue that's going to be created, because not everyone's hybrid gets amazing gas mileage, and they are paying their fair share. So that's going to be an issue we're going to have to address later this session.
Nick Milroy, your thought on the fee increases for electric and hybrid vehicles, and also just the transportation deal in general. What does it mean for your district up in northern Wisconsin?
Well, I think what it means for my district in northwestern Wisconsin is the same that it means for all of rural Wisconsin. It's more of the same. It's what we have seen over the last couple of decades, and both parties are to blame for it. But Wisconsin, everybody knows that Wisconsin's roads are crumbling. And Governor Walker and the Republicans spent the whole year talking about how to fix it, but they didn't come up with a sustainable funding solution. I mean, it's an absolute joke that the only revenue that they consider bringing to the table is a new tax on electric and hybrid vehicles. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me why you would want to try to tax people that are trying to do the right thing for the environment, that are typically driving smaller vehicles that don't do any damage to the road. To me, I just don't understand it.
So you'd be fine with just having them pay the standard licensing, you know, registration fees then of, what, $75 and extras?
Exactly. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to create this new tax. I mean, I can understand if you're a Republican and you think the only people that drive Priuses and electric cars are liberal Democrats, and, you know, this is an easy tax for them to put on people because it's not going to necessarily affect a lot of their constituencies, but really this is not solving any issues. It's just creating a new tax. It's not generating enough revenue to come anywhere near where we need to be to have a sustainable transportation.
Nick Milroy, I want to ask you, we're from the Democratic side of the aisle, was there surprise when Republicans in the Assembly, particularly, I think, started talking about increasing, you know, when Robin Voss started talking about raising the gas tax or addressing it, raising revenues, because generally that's kind of seemed like it's been off limits.
Yeah, I don't think so, because, you know, I think there are a lot of conservative people in both parties that realize that this is a real problem. And it's not just a problem for our roads. Our transportation infrastructure is really the backbone of, or the arteries, I guess you would say, of our economy. And if we don't have that high-quality transportation network, we're not going to have people investing in Wisconsin.
With that, let's go to the phones for the first call of the morning. Reminder to listeners, if you've got a question or a comment, let us know. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. We've got two open phone lines right now. Dan in Toma, you're on the air. What's on your mind, Dan?
All right, I have a couple comments. For one, on your transportation, maybe they should do what Missouri has. If it's got tires, you got to put a plate on it. And there's two things about it. It is a tax, kind of put plates on it. You look around, a lot of these chairs don't have plates. Because a lot of cops also can't find them because they're not registered. So thieves can take your trailer, you hear it in the paper all the time, the trailer disappeared, nobody could find it. So it would help to register it so you can have more security. And number two, if you put $13 on it, there's millions of dollars. Not saying it's going to do anything. It's not going to make some solution. And also for boat motors, if you register your boat motors, people could take a motor off a boat. No one can do anything about it because they're not registered. Besides within yourself. Just so you know that, and that's what they do down in Missouri, if you look at it, it's only $13, $14. But it also helps if someone takes the motor, now you got a registration, it's registered in the city,
you can track
state,
it.
Where you can actually find it.
Interesting.
Number two is on a Foxconn. I hear you in the paper, I'm a news freak, and they keep on seeing where short workers it is. You see all these factories looking for workers. How are you guys going to come up with 13,000 workers, and why would the heck would they want to hire just... No one wants to stay in Wisconsin, unfortunately. We don't have the warm climate. And like you said, the roads just stink. I mean, I drive semis, and so I travel a lot. And I look at local roads and over the interstate. We're always working on the interstate. But these local roads, and I also deliver newspapers. I have a route that's 150 miles long and a newspaper route. So, obviously, you know, I travel a lot of back roads.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, 7 days a week. I haven't had a day off since 2007. These roads are crumbling, and if people, I mean, how are we going to, why would you want to drive here with roads where your shocks and your tires and everything are worn out? Because they're that bad. I mean, patching it is one thing, but we need to fix it.
We got you, Dan. I wanted to ask you a question real quick. One lawmaker brought up an idea of having some special fee for semi-trucks. I forget what it was called, not a wheel tax, but it was something like that would have applied strictly to these vehicles because they are the heaviest and the theory is that they do the most damage. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, my question is this. What are we paying now? $3,238 per year average. Some pay more. It depends how many axles you got. All right, a car pays $100.
Gotcha. Okay.
What else do you want to put on? Our fuel, back when I first started driving, the fuel in this city for diesel fuel was $100. It was $1.19 was the highest. And down in the south was $0.89, $0.69. That is a tax that they've already tripled, if not doubled, to equal this.
Okay.
And then also when you do permits, I don't know if you've ever seen a permit in Wisconsin, you know, an oversized permit?
I have not.
You see those trucks going on the road, they're paying $200-$300 for one trip.
Okay.
How much more do you guys want to make a semi drive? I'm not saying, I mean, if we damage the road, yeah. If we hit a bridge, you wrench it, we'll fix it. But if a car hits a bridge, do you think the car ever fixes it?
Right. Gotcha. Dan, thank you so much for those thoughts. Nick Milroy, I'll go to you. What about the idea of requiring that all trailers, all things with axles be registered, which I kind of thought they had to be, but I don't know much about trailers. Whoops.
Well, I would say at the point that we're at, we really need to take anything into consideration when it comes to trying to find a sustainable transportation funding mechanism. I don't think anybody would be real excited about new fees or taxes. I don't think folks that have electric or hybrid vehicles are going to be excited to have to pay more money to drive their vehicles. And I know people like myself that have boats and boaters and trailers would not want to pay higher fees, but we really have to look at how we fund transportation, who's paying for it, and, you know, what is the fairest way to go about it.
And Romaine Quinn, your thoughts on, I mean, on the, this idea of registration for trailers, but also just the idea of little things here and there as a way to, come up with a lot of money that is needed.
Right. Well, and I think problem is part of this is identifying the problem. Not everyone in the legislature agrees that the problem is as bad as it is. Mm-hmm. Some recognize there's some issues. Some recognize it's a big problem. Some think there's no problems at all. Because, frankly, there are many in this state that are in wealthier areas that pay more in property taxes to make sure their roads are pristine. But overall, we know there are issues. So part of this whole conversation is hard to get people on the same page. But I thought the gentleman, it was interesting. And like you mentioned the heavy truck tax. A semi, I think, when it drives over a road, does I don't know how many thousand times more wear on that stretch than a single passenger car. And so, yes, I don't mind the gas tax because inherently those that weigh more generally get worse mileage and generally pay more in taxes. But do semis actually pay as much for maintenance of the road as they cause? I'm not sure on that. And that's the problem, too, is who do you add the fee to? I don't want to make the semi driver make less money. I don't know how they do their job now. Kudos to them. But maybe we need to look at the people who buy the products that are in that semi-truck going to the store. And that brings us back to maybe we just put more general fund dollars in transportation. People that pay income taxes. Because Joe Smith that lives in Rice Lake might not even have a car and he walks to town. Well, all of his clothes and his food and his amenities that he uses are all delivered on roads. But he doesn't contribute to the maintenance of that. So maybe we just look at putting more general fund dollars in or something that's more reflective of those that need the roads for their livelihood without penalizing a single group.
That would be an interesting study to see with online sales if there's more traffic going on because of it. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question for our lawmakers. I'm speaking with Republican Romaine Quinn of Chautauqua and Democrat Nick Milroy of South Range. Lynn in Eau Claire, you're on the air. What's on your mind, Lynn? Lynn, are you there? Well, we lost her. 1-800. Oh, here she is. Lynn, are you there?
Hello.
Hey.
Yes, yes.
What's on your mind, Lynn?
Hey. I would like to know specifically how many electric cars are out on the road tearing things up. I see a lot more big, SUVs, the larger trucks with one person in them. It just seems like, see, we did something. And nothing was done. There's not enough electric cars to justify taxing them. It's just plain silly.
Gotcha,
it's
Lynn.
Barter tricks.
Romaine Quinn, I'll send that one to you.
Sure.
Were there any numbers?
Yeah, I think the new fee raises about $7 to $8 million over the biennium. And so when we bond for roads, we bond for a 10-year or 15 or 20-year cycle. We would dedicate those revenues towards a specific bond. So I think they borrowed about $100 million to keep projects on track, knowing that that's a dedicated revenue source to pay that bond over its life. And again, not a single person has said this is a solve-all. Not a single person, legislator, has said our problem's going to go away after this. And no one has said that we want to do this to disincentivize the use of these vehicles. I would be fine if everyone drove an electric car. That's fine. But the point is these heavier vehicles do pay more in gas taxes. Electric cars don't pay gas tax, and it's not even just about the bigger cars. Why does Grandma Grandpa that drive the Buick LeSabre that gets 18 miles a gallon have to pay more in gas tax every year than someone that drives an all-electric vehicle? So it's not about penalizing them. I would, like I said, don't care if everyone had an electric car, but it's about making sure that those that use the road pay it. And that's why I said I've always been supportive of the gas tax, because I drive 40,000 miles a year with this job, and so I pay a lot more gas tax than most people, but I should. Because I'm using the road. So I think this was just about creating parity. But again, I will say, like I mentioned before, that I don't know if we hit the nail on the head with the hybrid portion, because not all hybrids get significantly better gas mileage.
It seems like an attempt to address the issue. I'm wondering if we as a state aren't heading towards per mile fees or something like that.
Well, that was talked about.
Right.
But I don't think it comes back to, do you want to submit where you're driving or how far you're driving every year to the DOT, or how do you want to track that?
Or have inspections or whatever.
Right.
Sure. Nick Miller, your thoughts on per-mile fees as a lawmaker who has to drive 5 hours to Madison consistently?
Well, Romaine said he puts on 40,000 miles a year, and I put on over 30,000 miles a year. So I think Romaine and I would Definitely be no votes on the per mile.
Okay. Well, with that, let's take our final break here. We've got a lot more to talk about. I want to get into funding for K-12, universities, and, of course, Foxconn. Let's not forget that. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We are live for the rest of this hour with Nick Milroy. He's a Democratic State Assemblyman representing the 73rd District of Northwestern Wisconsin. Romaine Quinn is a Republican State Assemblyman representing the 75th District of Western Wisconsin, lives in Chautauqua. 1-800-228-5615 to get your comment or question on the air.
I'm Veronica Rickert, host of WPR Central Time. If you're on social media, I encourage you to like and follow WPR's new Facebook page dedicated to the Ideas Network. You'll find information from Central Time, plus all the talk, information, and entertainment programs you listen to every day. Find more online at facebook.com/theideasnetwork.
Support for WPR comes from Oakwood Village Prairie Ridge, dedicated to building community, announcing their campus expansion, growing to serve the Madison area. Information is at 608-230-4580. Support also comes from the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. The Everly Brothers Experience, performed by the Zemed Brothers, comes to the Mabel Tainter Tuesday, September 26th at 7:30. More info is at mabeltainter.org.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer, joined for the rest of the hour by Nick Milroy. He is a state representative for the 73rd District. He lives in South Range. Romaine Quinn also joins us for the rest of the hour. He is a Republican state representative representing the 75th District, living in Chautauqua. 1-800-228-5615. To fill you in on what we're talking about, the state budget was just finalized last week, and also, a bill for a $3 billion incentive package going to Taiwanese company Foxconn with the hopes that it will create 13,000 jobs in Wisconsin, southwestern Wisconsin. But the idea is, and the claim is, that this will have ripple effects throughout the entire state through support industries, what have you. If you've got a question, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. So, I am actually literally trying to figure out what we should talk about first. Let's go with Foxconn, because, I teased school funding, so let's get to that, and then we'll work through that, but we'll have to work quickly, gentlemen. So, Nick Milroy, I'll start with you. State spending on K-12 schools would increase by $639 million over the next 2 years. That's an increase of around 6%. Per student aid, something that a lot of people have been clamoring about, is up $200 this year, or in 2018, I believe, and then $204 next year. I could be wrong on the exact timing of that because everything's off now that we're late. But Nick Milroy, is this a good deal for schools in your region?
I don't know if it's a good deal or a bad deal. What I can tell you is that starting this school year, school districts across the state are over $1 billion short of where they should have been. And these are because of the historic cuts that came in the last couple of budgets. So right now we're backfilling it with less money than is needed by school districts. So it's kind of like taking a gut shot wound and then somebody giving you a Band-Aid and saying, here, this is good for you, and slapping the Band-Aid on there. So I think we're way short of where we should be when it comes to funding our public schools. And what happens because of that is school districts go to referendum. And when these referendums pass, people's property taxes go up. So it's quite ironic when I look at my property taxes, ever since Governor Walker came into office, every budget he said property taxes were going to go down. My property taxes have gone up over $1,000. Since Governor Walker's been in office. And a lot of that is attributed to the fact that these school districts have to go to referendum to meet the needs of their students. We've had over 40% of school districts in the state go to referendum, and 70% of those have passed. This has led to huge property tax increases for a lot of families across Wisconsin.
Romaine Quinn, I want to take your – if you have any comments to respond to Nick Milroy, you can start with that. But the same question to you. Are you happy with the per-pupil aid going up? Because I know that you were hoping to direct as much money as possible to rural districts.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I will take issue with this billion-dollar number because this has been used since Act 10. Well, education funding has been going up since 2010. I wasn't around during Act 10. I'm not sure if Representative Milroy was or not. But even after this budget, that billion-dollar number is not accurate, and Democrats refuse to recognize any of the savings and take that into account, that there are dollars going into the classroom from savings through greater contributions by educators. And not only that, just being able to bid out insurance. Remember, the teachers union insurance had a monopoly on every school district in the state, and schools were not able to bid that out. I know the Rice Lake School District alone saved over $500,000 just by being able to bid their insurance out. So to say that they're $1 billion short is just not accurate. This is a substantial increase, and this is something that we've been pushing for a long time. If you remember last budget, the governor slated for a initial small cut in the first year, slight increase in the second year. We said absolutely not. Our caucus and Joint Finance gave him an increase. There was no cut last budget. This budget, there's a lot more money, and they're getting $639 million. So we can say that, yes, Act 10 was bad, and yes, there was originally a cut. But how are we not supportive of this now? And you can say it's about the election or not. I don't care what the reason is, but why wouldn't you support it? And that's the sad part is we didn't get a single Democrat vote on this. How do you not support sending millions of more dollars to the classroom? And that's what this will do. And I'm glad you touched on the per pupil piece, because I've been arguing for categorical aids, because a lot of times districts and Representative Milroy's district and mine, who butt each other, our large districts get the short end of the stick when it comes to the funding formula because they're so large, high property values, larger share that we're paying out of our personal pockets. Categorical increases are important because they go outside of the formula. But not only that, we said if you're going to give this much categorically, let's try to address low-spending districts. So what we did for Spooner and Turtle Lake and Cameron and other districts that are low spenders, we're allowing them to raise their levy to create some parity with other districts to be able to compete on the same playing field while we're still sinking millions of dollars to ensure that property taxes, on average, not just Representative Milroy's house, stay lower than they were previously.
That was the assembly plan that was included in the budget.
Right. So okay. It wasn't exactly, but we pushed for that. We said if there's this much money, let's address some of the discrepancies that we see between our districts. For instance, Cameron spend like $9,200 a student. Rice Lake, Barron, and Chautauqua surrounding Cameron spend about $10,500 per student. Why would we give them all the same when they all have different levels of funding locally? Why not raise those low spenders? So that's what we did. So there are millions of more dollars going into classrooms for kids in my district starting as soon as this budget is signed. And I think that's something we should all be supportive of. And again, unfortunately, that's why, like I said, there's increases for rural hospitals, healthcare, RWI bills are in there, all sorts of stuff. But there's such a focus on the 20% people don't like that we could not get a single bipartisan vote. And I just think that's unfortunate.
Nick Milroy, a response? Could Democrats have done more to get involved with the things that they might have liked, like the per pupil aid or whatever, in the education side of the budget?
Well, let me talk about the per pupil aid first. Number one, it's not funded. So what it means is that when you add $200 per pupil, the way that it's going to be added is onto property taxes. So that's just going to continue to increase property taxes. Everybody in Wisconsin knows that property taxes are too high. So a lot of times, you know, people will come up with these gimmicks to make it look like they're investing a bunch of new money into something when, in fact, they're just passing those costs on to property taxpayers.
I saw a shaking head in the studio. Romaine Quinn, you'd like to respond.
No, that's just not true. The $200 per pupil and the $204 per pupil per student, whichever district they're in, is money going directly into the classroom. That's not paid by property taxpayers. That is state funding in a categorical outside the general formula. So, Nick, you're just wrong on that.
Well, I hope I am, because I don't need my property taxes going up any higher.
Well, in mentioning houses, I mean, I bought my house 2 years ago. I just sold, but the housing market's hot. Everyone's working. Housing prices have gone up. Wages are going up in my district. Things are doing well. And on my home, I bought it just 2 years ago. 4 years before that, property taxes on that were $400 to $500 higher. So, I mean, we can anecdotally look at our own houses, and everyone is different, and I get that. And I've had people come to me with their bills, and I appreciate that, and it's frustrating. Well, at least we're focusing on it. Over the last 6 years, at least we're talking about it. At least we're putting millions to try and buy it down. So, yeah, not everyone's is the same, but if Fiscal Bureau, nonpartisan, runs the numbers, and they say state average across the board, they are down.
I want to talk about quarries very quickly. A policy provision slipped into the state transportation budget would have exempted it's complicated because the governor said he's going to veto it. But anyway, the idea was that it would exempt local quarries, gravel pits, and sand mines from certain local regulations if they sell most of their product for public road projects or public projects in general. Governor Walker has said he's going to veto this provision. I raised some eyebrows among people that are concerned about sand mining. The Towns Association was involved in this. Romaine Quinn, you were like the first lawmaker that I saw via Facebook or any platform to go public with details about how this small change nearly turned into kind of a coup for the frac sand industry or whoever was behind it. Can you explain what this was about?
Well, we only have a couple of minutes,
have to talk to Foxconn.
In a nutshell, the Township Association and the Aggregate Producers of Wisconsin have been negotiating in good faith for the last 10 months, over a year, on how to figure out how to get quarries and aggregate to construction sites within close proximity. Because some townships had been shutting down quarries through more restrictive regulation than most. And so what it did was it drove up the cost of transportation for taxpayers, because if you take 200,000 tons of aggregate and now you're hauling that an extra 15 miles, that adds up quick. So they negotiated in good faith. At the last minute, and I agree, you should, when you pass a law, it should be equal for related industries. So frac sand industry wanted equal treatment. Unfortunately, there's a number of issues in the original agreement that would not have sat well with me or the Towns Association if fracking was included. So some Western legislators and myself rallied with our leadership to try and make sure that frac sand was not included in that proposal. But then that gave other people heartburn, because if you want to treat one industry one way, you should treat them equally. And I understand that. But there were a number of issues in there. For instance, property value guarantees. I know fracking may not have asked for that, but if we're creating parity, it would have applied to them. So there are a number of issues that we need to prevent, and I'm glad they were. And now that the whole piece is coming out, it really doesn't give me heartburn either. So we've had our finger on this a while, and I'm glad to say we influenced the process to ensure, which I said when I first ran for office, is that the fracking industry should be controlled by locals, and that in most cases, 90% of the time, level heads will prevail, and agreements will be struck that make sense for both businesses and locals.
Because this is what a subject that I cover a lot for the news, I want to keep asking questions, but I'll ask after.
Sure.
let's talk about Foxconn. Nick Milroy, I'll start with you. Lawmakers approved $3 billion in taxpayer incentives to lure technology giant Foxconn into Wisconsin. The company says it will build a $10 billion with a B dollar factory complex and hire upwards of 13,000 people. It's been reported that this is the largest economic incentive package ever offered and could be the largest economic development in Wisconsin history by far. Did you vote for the incentives? Why or why not?
I did not. And the way that I look at this is a high risk, high reward type proposition. So it's like walking into a casino and saying, what should I do today? Should I play the nickel slots, or should I take my last $500 in my wallet and slap it on the roulette wheel? And I think that's what's going on here, is we are playing roulette with a lot of taxpayer dollars. This $3 billion is going to come from every single taxpayer from every single corner of the state. And I think that the risk is way too high to invest that type of money. Now, that being said, I will do everything I can to make sure that if we're investing this money, that we do what we can to make sure that this is successful, because this does have a potential huge reward, and I think everybody wants to see something happen here in Wisconsin that could potentially transform our economy. But when you're talking about a $3 billion investment from every taxpayer across the state, every corner of the state, it's a huge risk.
Only a handful of Democrats voted for this. I wanted to ask you, if the potential facility was going to be located in your district, would you vote differently?
That is something that I have thought long and hard about, and I still don't have an answer for it, because you want to always legislate your ideals and your district's ideals And I don't know if those change if they're in a different area. I think if it was in my district, I would definitely try to structure the incentive so it didn't have an impact on people 7 hours to the southeast of me, so that more of that burden was shared by the people who were going to benefit from it most. And that's why with the exposition district, we weren't asking for any state money. We were asking for the authority to tax ourselves to create an exposition district similar to how they're doing the Confluence Project in Eau Claire or the exposition districts in Green Bay or Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, sure. The only reason I bring that up, Representative Milroy, is because Peter Barca stepped down from his leadership role, and it's basically been reported that he had to leave because a lot of Democrats were upset that he voted yes for Foxconn, which could be in his district. Any thoughts on that real quick?
Yeah, I mean, it would be absolutely political suicide to vote against something that has such a great potential reward. You're talking billions of dollars of investments in one specific region of the state. If you're elected to represent that area, that's almost a no-brainer to vote for something like that, especially when the risk is being spread out across the state.
Foxconn, your thoughts on the vote? Did you vote yes?
Yeah, yes, I did. And I just find it funny. I'm not sure if I'd vote for it if it's in my district, but it'd be political suicide not to vote for it if it was in my district.
So your thoughts on Foxconn?
Yes, I did vote for Foxconn. And again, it's like walking in a casino, gambling on the roulette table, but have an insurance policy, because Foxconn does not get a dollar unless the shovel's in the ground and the employees there already cash their paycheck. So we built this and structured it in a way that makes sense to protect taxpayers. I think it'll be a boon for the state. I'm going right after this to a local economic development meeting to see the suppliers in the Chippewa Valley and north of here that'll be able to supply Foxconn. I think it's a huge win for the state. And unfortunately, it was partisanship that threw Mr. Barca out of his leadership position, because they can't stand that someone voted for a deal Governor Walker negotiated.
Many more discussions to be had on that subject. I'd like to thank our guests for their discussion this hour. Nick Milroy is a Democratic State Assemblyman representing the 73rd District. Romaine Quinn is a Republican State Assemblyman representing the 75th. Thank you both. Next week, we're going to talk about an attempt to repeal a 20-year-old law that has blocked the sulfide mining industry in Wisconsin. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.